Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Hello and welcome to this latest episode of the Property Exchange podcast. This time, London's new residential hotspots that started off as shops, offices and workshops. In this episode, we're focusing on the new residential hotspots that used to be commercial properties. More offices, shops and industrial units are being turned into homes. But will there be enough supply to meet the insatiable demand for new homes? If there's more interest than expected for these premises from businesses and retailers? For example, in the wake of the pandemic, it was thought that many empty department stores were destined to become homes. Are such conversions taking place? Or is the stronger than expected level of consumer confidence meaning that more shops than we ever thought will find tenants? To find out what's really happening, what it says about the economy and how investors could benefit, I'm joined by Adam Stackhouse, Director of Developments and Commercial Investments at Winkworth, and by Charles Jordan, who heads Winkworth's new homes team. First to you, Adam, I want you to guide us through the trends that you're seeing in the commercial sector. Are the dark clouds that surrounded this part of the property market lifting?
Thank you, Anne. Well, yes, certainly those dark clouds are starting to lift, but only gradually. I think in the UK, there's a very obvious imbalance between supply and demand in residential. But commercial and investment markets are a little more complex than that. And at the moment, the headline data would be that there's plentiful supply and that we can't really track what local government policies are and national government is operating on a different level. So what needs to happen to really make the clock tick again? Analysing data that we're seeing in the market, there are significant increase now in investment deals that are taking place, but certain things need to be in situ for those deals to happen. Number one, we need to see a strong covenant. So a large multinational company, a blue chip covenant, will ensure that when a pension fund needs to sell a building, because perhaps they've got a cash call to investors, that's a relatively smooth and profitable process for them. Other sectors, such as the hotel market, are continuing to thrive. The exchange rate is of such key importance to the commercial property sector in the UK. There's a healthy level of demand from people visiting the UK. And we're seeing that this overspill of appetite for consumerism in this country is helping to stabilise the commercial market and restore things back to a pre-pandemic level.
So we thought we'd see loads of empty shops. We're going to see rather fewer than we expected.
Indeed, yes, that's correct. And I think we mustn't forget, I mean, this sort of Anglo-Saxon community of old, we're quite an industrious group and we find solutions, we talk to each other, you know, deals are done. I mean, secondary high streets, perhaps where they haven't been traditionally owned by large pension vehicles, where individual landlords will adapt and be flexible, are finding ways through these sort of tangled web of exposure to that kind of post-pandemic challenge. The reality is that I think there's a recovery happening. It's quite a long recovery. It's not without risk. But specifically in terms of the high street, we're seeing that people are really focused on eating out once again. The return to work for office personnel is driving demand for lunchtime trade. And those types of businesses are the ones that we're getting most traction from.
So we're back shopping, we're back eating out, and we're back in the office. But what kind of offices are tenants looking for now?
Well, I think the analogy I've given in the past is almost like a shuffling of squares. So we must constantly be aware that businesses overall are probably shrinking in terms of headcount. Now, we won't go off at a tangent about AI or other things that are influencing that. The reality is that the companies are, on the whole, are holding fewer full-time employees on their books. So that means that large swathes of office space, almost wasted square footage, vast expanses of floors in the city are not now being occupied by just one tenant. So businesses are expanding, they're growing in terms of their balance sheet, but they're diversifying into smaller footplates within these buildings. They're looking for multi-let premises. They want to retain the identity of their business. They want the employees to feel like they belong somewhere. And an important part of that is how you feel when you walk in. Previously, you know, there was a lot of wasted space all over the UK, and I think business leaders are being a little bit more cute as to how they make these leasing decisions. In terms of the sort of fit-out standards, I've come across scenarios and deals that we're doing where business leaders, property teams have asked the staff in to decide. I mean, we've never had to negotiate with the staff before. But the reality is they are an important part because the return to work has to be a gentle process.
So when the staff go in and look over the office, what are they looking for? What kind of facilities do they want?
Well, the starting point for all of our requirements at the moment seems to be a transport hub. I mean, this is a completely indisputable topic. So in many ways, you won't even get the deal off the ground if you're not within close proximity. So the arrival of facilities such as the Elizabeth line have helped us enormously to really supercharge London back to where it was pre-pandemic. I think when you have satisfied this requirement for immediacy to a central transport hub, people will walk in and question you on things such as BREEAM, whether it's an environmentally responsible building. They're interested in their outlook, their levels of natural light. Is the air circulation system up to date? Has it got anti-COVID filters? It's not just going back to, you know, is there a pool table? Will I get free coffee? It's a little bit more than that.
So if you could spell out BREEAM, that's environmental standards. How does that work?
Well, there's a Europe-wide policy, which we are participating in, perhaps one of the few initiatives at the moment. We're fully vested into it in the UK, and it will become a key point of analysis for the value of a building. So if you think that some of the larger commercial assets across Europe, so looking in the UK, and you might have particularly strong covenants, Amazon, Google and the like, then these buildings will be in part valued on their BREEAM credentials. So it has to be taken notice of, and legislation is there to support that.
So the outlook could be quite poor for buildings that are essentially poorly insulated, have very poor air conditioning and are basically antiquated.
Well, I'm glad you said it, Anne, because therein lies the opportunity. These buildings now really have no way back for this particular type of use. And that's why we're remaining hopeful that both local and national government strategy will start to align itself, particularly in the southeast, and we can start to look forward and satisfy the shortage of new build properties and convert some of these buildings into really beautifully located, potentially quite small, but, you know, highly suitable homes for workers.
Now, we've read that the government has dropped, very controversially, its target of delivering 300,000 new homes a year. But what you're saying is that these offices could give us the new homes that we need. What needs to happen, and how can the planning system work with developers to make this happen?
Well, I hope you can detect my frustration in part, because the reality is that the solution is out there in front of us. We've spoken about buildings that need to be repurposed. We're looking at suitable large-scale sites within urban locations that would be literally perfect for conversion into residential. They just can't be used anymore for the commercial use and the trends that are starting to evolve. So really, I think the fundamental thing that sprang to mind, we've just had a series of local elections just pass us by recently, and there's such a lack of understanding between local planning policy and national planning policy. And I think it's time for the government really to step in and take firm control and start to hit some of these targets that they've bandied around. Because if they do lean on local government to the necessary levels, then we should find that we can satisfy this imbalance and deliver the housing that everybody wants.
What you say is really very interesting against the background of both main political parties now declaring themselves to be the party of home ownership. The Tories are the party of home ownership, and so is Labour. So it looks as if we need new homes, but where are they going to come from? And on that point, I'm going to turn to you, Charles. Can you give us an overview of conditions in the new homes market in London, and then maybe mention what's happening elsewhere?
Yes, of course, Anne. Thank you very much. I think we're in a bit of a strange market at the moment. In recent times, as the bank base rates were increased to tackle growing inflation, the economic hangover of the pandemic was made worse by the war in Ukraine. And while the top end of the market was less exposed to disruption in the mortgage market than the general UK housing market, it wasn't immune. As data shows, the net number of agreed sales over 1 million fell drastically in October of last year as buyers adjusted their budgets. This continued into November, but then with each month that's followed, there's been a gradual normalisation in activity levels. That recovery in activity has been helped by sellers resetting their price expectations. While at the height of the mini housing market boom, sellers could price high and wait for the market to catch up with their expectations. This is no longer an option, particularly given the reduced buying power of upsizers and first-time buyers. As a consequence, the market has become more price sensitive, particularly in the prime regional markets where values have fallen around 2 or 3%. In the 6 months, probably to the end of March, the effect in the prime markets of London have been less pronounced, partly because prices hardly rose between 2020 and 2023, and partly because demand has refocused back towards the capital as day-to-day life has returned to the normal after the pandemic.
So it's like a return to normal after the madness of the race for space of the pandemic, then the reset of the mini budget. There's been a reality check. People are thinking, I can afford to pay so much. And that's being reflected in the asking prices and also in the sales prices of properties. Against this kind of background, what do you sense that developers are going to do next? Are they going to carry on building or do you think that they'll hit the pause button?
I think developers are going to carry on building, to be honest. Developing is still a very profitable business. I can't see the developers slowing down. There's still a huge demand for housing in London and regionally. So, yeah, I can't see any slowdown at all.
And what kind of properties are they going to be delivering and where? We've been talking about the former commercial premises that would be ideal for homes. Are developers looking at those kind of slightly shabby office blocks and thinking, that's where I could produce my gorgeous new development?
Yeah, absolutely. It's common for developers, especially in London, to consider formal commercial premises as potential sites for residential development. The high demand for housing in London combined with the limited available land has led to an increasing trend of repurposing existing buildings for residential use. In recent years, there's been several high-profile examples of commercial to residential conversions, such as the transformation of the Battersea Power Station and the conversion of the BBC Television Centre into luxury apartments. As previously mentioned, the Whiteley Shopping Centre, additionally, smaller scale conversions of office buildings, warehouses and other commercial properties into residential units are also becoming increasingly popular. However, it's worth noting that converting commercial properties into residential units in London can be challenging. There's many regulatory hurdles, technical considerations to take into account. Developers must also consider the local market demand for the type of housing they intend to build and whether the cost of conversion and refurbishment is actually financially viable.
You've talked about some really gorgeous landmark developments in the centre of town, Battersea Power Station, TV Centre, Whiteley's. If you're listening to this and you haven't been to see these schemes, go and take a look because they are models of what you can do with former commercial premises. Outside the centre, is there anything interesting happening in possibly more challenged areas that are up and coming?
There's huge regeneration projects taking place in London at the moment. There's sites such as the one in Canada Water, which is being developed by British Land. I mean, that's 54 acres of brand new commercial residential development that's taking place. I was at a scheme yesterday in Brentford, which is called the Brentford Project, being developed by Ballymore. Again, that's a 24-acre site, mixed-use scheme, 800 units with a mixture of of commercial and an office space. There's also a real big push in these new opportunity areas to really integrate local businesses. So we're seeing not so much high street brands like Boots, we're seeing local businesses, local bakeries, local shops, florists, really trying to make a sense of community in these areas.
So what you're saying is actually quite optimistic. Regeneration is happening. It's bringing homes, it's bringing businesses, it's creating communities.
Yes, absolutely.
So there are opportunities for investors here. If anybody was thinking of maybe moving into that market as an investor, what would your view be?
There's massive opportunities for investors in these areas. If we look at London as a whole and we see what happened at Battersea Power Station, values have almost tripled, if not doubled, since the launch of that scheme back in 2013. I think it's important to note in these areas that developers can't just build flats. They can't build blocks of apartments. They have to integrate the commercial spaces, the office spaces, and it has to be mixed use. Again, Battersea Power Station is a prime example of this, where you go down there at the weekend for a drink, go shopping. It's buzzing down there. It's a really good atmosphere, and it's getting busier and busier.
You're so right, Battersea Power Station. It's the new fun place to go. And if you're visiting, you can go up in a lift in one of the towers and get the most glorious view of London. Do try it if you're here on a visit. Now, Adam, there is a great scheme happening in Wood Green, isn't there, on a very interesting site?
Certainly is, Anne. Yes, the light industrial side of our business has been increasingly busy, and sometimes we have to take a step back and say, well, actually, the purpose of this site is not sustainable for the future. This particular piece of land up in N22 was probably one of the largest centres for servicing London taxis. A real joy to behold, actually, and heaps of character there. And the reality is that with the problems over the pandemic, taxis weren't on the road. And then latterly, there's been a surge in electric vehicles. So there's no further use for this particular maintenance and repair centre. It's a large site. So the family that sit behind this particular business have decided to go for planning, and they've got a consent for about 30 beautiful houses and apartments, really coming at relatively affordable levels. There's lots of character as well, because, you know, the London Taxis are a heritage brand, so we've employed a consultancy to really try and capture that sort of interesting feature, and we're going to market this site overseas and, you know, use the taxi brand as a good hook for potential buyers. It's a really exciting project.
Charles, that sounds really interesting. As I understand it, there are a couple of other interesting schemes bubbling up. The Whiteleys scheme, for example.
Yes, the Whiteleys is an absolutely fantastic development, something that I've been working on very recently. It's London's probably most significant super prime regeneration scheme at the moment at the end of Queensway. It's part of a £3 billion pound regeneration of Queensway, which leads all the way down from the Whiteley Shopping Centre down to Hyde Park. There's even a new entrance to Hyde Park, which is being developed there. And it's just such an amazing building. The developer are keeping the facade. And then internally, you've got a brand new Six Senses Hotel, which has pretty much every amenity that you could imagine. And the apartments themselves, although they're sort of more suited towards the super prime, high net worth buyers, you know, with sort of one bed starting at 1.5 million, it's very, very unique. And yeah, really looking forward to that development being finished.
And so, Adam, what would your advice to government be on how to boost housing supply?
I think the ability to integrate with local government. So national planning policy is completely misaligned with local planning policy. These roadblocks, these obstacles need to be overcome. And every time we think we're making some progress and we get statements from central government, various boroughs elect to opt out. You know, they seek out, you know, injunctions so they don't have to toe the line. And I think it's time for national government to really step in and say, we've got this housing target. The country needs to fulfill this demand for private homes, and, you know, we're jolly well going to deliver it. And the only way to do that is to work collaboratively with local government and not to have these barriers in place that seem to be spoiling the process.
Well, I think that sounds like a good point to wrap it up. Adam and Charles, thanks very much for joining us for this episode of The Property Exchange. Do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast, where we'll be talking about another hot issue in the world of property.
This has been The Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.